Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Well, all I got is my life being free. Close so I'm up, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to episode 104 of New Shooter Canada. This week, we are going to be talking about the health benefits of the shooting range, or going shooting. And before we get to that, we must begin with our customary what we did in guns. And I'll start us off, because I always do, because I'm selfish that way. I actually went shooting this week.
No.
I'm going to pause while all our listeners pick themselves up off the floor. And... I went shooting with my dad. I posted up on Facebook, so if you follow me on Facebook, you probably saw the pictures. We had the Mosin and his SKS out. So I was plinking away with the Mosin, and by the time I had 40 rounds fired, he had already gone through 125 rounds through the SKS. And he was loading the last clip, and yes, it is a clip, not a magazine. And he turns to me and he goes, you didn't want to shoot this, did you? And I'm like, well, how much rounds do you have left? And he looks at the clip. He looks at me, pushes the clip in. He goes, none. I'm like, I guess I'm not shooting the SKS then. So that was kind of funny. And then I got to ring the gong a few times. And the best part of it was I think we were at the range for 4 hours, so had 4 hours of father and son time at the range, so it was pretty awesome.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. So, Thomas, what did you do?
Nothing. I'm sick. I got a respiratory infection. I got a respiratory infection in my lungs. I got a virus in my eyes. It wasn't even safe to drive up to Barrie today, so Terry was a little disappointed that. But she wants me to stay home and get better. So, and the doctor gave me the whole week off if I wanted. So, some good news at least.
Nice. How do you get a virus in your eye?
I don't know. I was at work on Friday. And I knew it was a respiratory infection because I'm prone to them with my asthma and being a smoker. And I'm trying to read my little computer. So I've got my phone going with the app that I'm running for work, and I've got my computer for work. And all of a sudden, I couldn't see the screen. The stuff was just literally pouring out of my eyes. It was so bad. And then Saturday morning, I couldn't open my eyes when I got up. But they glued shut in my sleep.
Oh.
Yeah. So and they're like being poked with hot sticks. They've been really sore. So.
Ouch.
I didn't feel like going shooting today. What about you, Mike?
Oh, earlier in the week, before we left Manitoba, Sarah and I were doing some dry firing. We had signed up for an IDPA match this weekend, which I'll get to in a little bit. And Sarah wanted to do some dry fire practice just to try and get back into the swing of things and feel comfortable with stuff. So we did a whole pile of drawing and, you know, different positions to start from to draw, like spinning and drawing and stuff like that. We shot the little steel swinger again with the Kui 22, Sarah and I. Shot that a bit. I really need to work on my rifle shooting. It's just absolutely terrible. And
Mary does have coaching clinics on the weekends.
Yeah.
She's got 4 or 5 clinics coming up.
Yeah. Well, I would say that I'm, and this sounds bad, I know, but I would say that I'm competition accurate, not bullseye accurate.
Like I think someone needs a maple seed or an apple seed then, and they need to improve with a rifle.
Well, it's also with my Kui, and I have no idea where those sights are aiming. I hadn't actually shot that one in a long time, but I knew at one point it was sighted, whereas the only other 22 rifle I had was my Ruger 10/22, and since the maple seed, I don't think I've shot it where my scope broke during the maple seed. I haven't actually shot it. So I have no idea where those iron sights are aiming. So I figured it was better off to go with the gun that was at least at one point sighted in than the gun that's not sighted in at all.
We'll take a shot at this one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Bird falls out of the sky. Well, shooting a bit high, I think.
You don't have your hunting license, right, Mike?
I have my hunting license. I don't have any tags. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But then the Wes, when I went and I saw him last week, he gave me that that thing of Sure Shot, the exploding target. And he told me that apparently their range in Regina, their CFO said no to the shooting that on the range. So he gave me that to take back to my in-laws. And pretty much the only thing that I had that was non-restricted on me was a .22 rifle and a shotgun. So
is it enough to detonate it?
Unfortunately, no. We put it out there, 50 yards. And pretty much between me, my brother-in-law, and Sarah, we each took turns shooting at it to try and get it to go off. And my brother-in-law was the first one to hit it, and he flipped it over, and nothing happened. So we waited for a few minutes, and I just figured, okay, well, I'll go up and check on it. And I got about halfway up, and I could see it, because it was in kind of the long grass area. So I thought, okay, I'll shoot again. So I shot it, and I saw it flip up in the air, the container. But nothing went boom, so I waited a few more minutes, walked up, and the shot went right through the middle, and these were, a little hole in the front, giant hole in the back, and
it came with the user's manual. Did you read it?
Yeah,
and what did it say?
It said to use at least a .223 caliber.
Yeah. Okay.
But I did look on. Well, here's the thing. I seem to remember when the guy was handing these out at the 3-gun like a month ago. He said, "Oh, you can set these off with .22."
There are some .22 specific ones.
Yeah, and I looked online, and before I did this, I kind of thought, "Well, I'll check it out first before I shoot this and possibly waste it." And it was 50-50. Some people said, "Oh yeah, it went off first time I hit it with my .22," and other people said, "Nope, shot it, 20 times, never went off." So I kind of thought, well, I'll just shoot it, and if it doesn't go off, well, I got this one for free, so who cares, right?
Well, it's no good now. Once you mix it, its shelf life is like a day or something.
Yeah, well, that, and after I kind of half blew the container open, it says right on the packaging that if it doesn't detonate for whatever reason, if you pour a bottle of water on it, it'll make it completely inert again. So I just dumped a bottle of water and spread it around, and yeah. So that was a bit of a disappointment. And I think the saddest part of it was that I had an AR that was probably 50 feet away from me.
Oh, I know.
That if I could have only taken it out and shot it on my in-law's property, that would have set it off. But I had to do with what I had. So that's pretty much it. After that, Sarah and I had driven back from all the way from Manitoba back to Ontario, finally home again. We went to do setup for an IDPA match out at EOSC. So I went and I set up while Sarah came with me, and she watched Leela. And after that, I shot the match. Well, very first stage, I pull out my revolver. It goes off. Boom. I see the hole. Pull the trigger again. I hear pop. And I don't see a hole. And just from competition, my instincts went, I need to put another round into it. So I pulled the trigger again. And that one went boom. But I noticed there was still no new hole on the target. And the target was at most 2 yards away. So I could clearly see if there was a hole in this target or not. So I just called myself right there. I'm like, I should have called myself on that first one, but my hands were already in motion before my head even, wrapped its brain around the fact that this just went pop and not bang.
When it went pop the first time, you put a second round in it?
Second round went in behind it.
Did it actually discharge?
It discharged, yep. So you got
two squibs in the barrel, or did it knock one of them out?
I'm pretty sure there's two in there. I stopped myself, emptied it out. There were three empty casings, only one hole in the paper. So I'm assuming there's two in there. And
that's why you're having trouble getting it out, because there's two of them.
Yeah, so he hammered on them with a squib rod someone had, but it was like a .22 squib rod. It wasn't really big enough. Luckily, because it was just a level one, and I know the guy, and he was nice enough. And I said, I brought Sarah's stuff with us in case we could figure out how to shoot with the baby there at the same time. And he said, you know what? Just go grab her gun and her stuff, put it on, and just shoot with the M&P today. So I did that. So I grabbed the M&P and shot with that. Everything else went off fine without a hitch.
So this was your SIG that you had, the Squib?
No, this was my Ruger GP100.
Oh, okay. And you said something about it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where that... So I shot with the M&P, and she has the Apex trigger kit. It's everything but the actual trigger. In IDPA, you can't change the actual trigger, but you can change the parts inside with non-factory stuff. And I realized I haven't really shot her M&P since she got that kit for it. I used to hate her M&P. I thought it was the worst trigger ever. So I end up loving this thing. It shot fast. It shot accurate. It was... things were really good. I ended up finding out today, because then today we went back again, and Sarah shot the match while I watched Leela. So I was there for the whole match again, and I actually ended up coming third overall in the whole match.
Excellent.
Yeah, out of over 20 people, I think there were. So clearly that worked out well, besides the squibs, the two squibs in there. So when I came home, I tried to fix my revolver. The guy had given me a proper sized brass rod to try and knock it out, and so I almost completely disassembled the revolver. I took the grip off, took the cylinder out, took the trigger group off, and I hammered at it a few times, and I realized it wasn't moving at all. So I got to call up a gunsmith and see if they can do something with that. I'm not going any further with this. I'm just going to ruin it if I do anything else to it.
Well, it's no worse than my buddy that put six in. So two might be repairable, and there might not be any damage. Are they in the forcing cone, or do you see a bulge in the barrel at all?
You see nothing. Like if you didn't check that gun, I could pretty much sell it to you, and you wouldn't even know if there's anything in there.
So the moral is, if you buy a gun off of Mike, make sure you check the barrel.
Well, that's the advantage of a Ruger firearm. They are well over engineered. They're super strong.
Yeah. And really that's what some of the guys kept saying, you know, like, oh, don't worry about it. It'll probably be fine. You just need to get a gunsmith to get out. But I'll have to see what happens to the accuracy of it when it comes back. I don't know, because if he says that I need a new barrel, I don't know how much. Do you guys know how much a new barrel would cost?
Last time I looked at getting a new barrel was for my Smith, and that was probably 10, 15 years ago, and it was over $400 back then. So you're probably talking half the price of a gun to get a barrel and have a gunsmith install it.
Yeah.
That was a Smith. The Rugers might be cheaper.
Yeah, but if it's anywhere near that price. At that, like, if he says either your barrel's screwed or whatever, at that point in time, I almost might as well just buy another Ruger and then use this one for parts, minus the barrel.
Well, see, Asher Gunsmith, to get an estimate, like, what it costs is for Ruger, and an estimate on a shop time.
Like, yeah.
My guy charges, he's reasonable, like, mine's guy's $75 an hour shop time. But get a ballpark first, and then, yeah, you might have to use it for parts.
Yeah, but it will all depend on what happens when if he can get it out and how much damage comes from it when gunsmith gets it out. Hopefully,
just don't take a drill to it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, don't worry. I don't plan on it.
Are you cutting torches work?
I'm not saying a word. I'm not saying a word. I'm just turning off my phone so I don't get my notifications.
So after that, I decided, well, I can't fix my revolver. I'll go back to my AR. And people remember from last week, my handguard became a quick disconnect. So I've never taken my handguard off my AR or anything like that. So I had to spend some time looking at it. And I kind of figured out that there were the two tensioning screws that held in. So you have to slide it in and it won't line up. And then when you push and twist it, and you twist it until it gets lined up correctly, and then you tighten down these two tensioning screws. So I get it all lined up, put a little bit of Loctite on the screw. I kind of put them in, and then I tighten one up, And I just tighten it, not real tight, but just until it gets a little bit of resistance. Then I switch to the other one, and I do that until it gets a little bit of resistance. And I was literally going back and forth, like very little effort, going back and forth, until all of a sudden all I hear is crack. The two pieces of metal that are separated, there's like airspace in between. And as you tighten these screws, it pulls the two parts together to hold it tight onto your rifle. That part cracked and broke on my handguard.
Is it plastic or metal?
It's metal.
Is it aluminum? What kind of AR is it?
It's an NEA upper. So I'm going to contact NEA and see what they have to say about that. But it looks like I might be getting a new handguard.
Well, from what I heard, NEA is pretty good, so I would send it back to them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'll see what they have to say about it. But, yeah, that kind of surprised me.
See, I was thinking my handguard, because my handguard's free floated from the barrel. It doesn't contact the barrel at all, and it's just threads into a countersink thread in the lock screw right in the right in front of the receiver.
Okay, yeah, mine, I believe it is a free float, and the barrel nut, I don't know how to describe it. The barrel nut has like fingers on it. So when you slide the handguard over, you slide it down the fingers into the slots, and then you turn it so that the fingers are now lined up with the handguard. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it is. So you line it up that way, and then you tighten. Then you just screw these two tensioning screws on the bottom, tighten them up, and you're good to go. So.
I wouldn't know I'm that far in my build yet.
No?
I totally got called out on Facebook by Tim in Texas.
Oh, yeah?
He just built another lower. He's like, so, how's your build coming, George?
Well, if you need some advice on handguards, I might know how tight is too tight. Yeah, so
you're not looking at 45-70s anymore, George?
I'm not looking at anything right now.
Okay.
I want all the old guns and can't afford any of them. Oh, I took my girls out today for pedicures. Don't know what that is.
I'm sure they would say that that's money well spent.
I'm sure they would.
This is where I was going to insert the cricket sounds. Did you get your toes done too, George?
I was going to, but I decided not to. I'm not going there. All right, guns in the news. story one. Oh, I just about got into a whole world of trouble. All right, story number one. The courts have rejected Mossberg's trigger patent infringement case for the second time. Back in May, we reported that Mossberg had filed a lawsuit against 12 drop-in trigger manufacturers. Mossberg holds the patent on the trigger pack for ARs, which they acquired a few years ago from CMC Triggers. We did find a copy of the court's long decision, and the link is in the show notes. While the decision is not final, it does make some interesting reading. And again, it is a lot of reading. We have a feeling that Mossberg may not be very successful with their lawsuit against drop-in trigger manufacturers. Sure, a direct copy of the original design is patent infringement, and Mossberg should be compensated. But the external appearance of drop-in trigger groups are the same because it has to fit into a pre-existing space. The internal design parts and materials are very different on the inside, which has been called into question before the courts. And then there is a link for the court ruling, which is off the firearms blog. And we will have our editor extraordinaire, Mr. Mike, to throw that into the show notes.
Okie dokie.
Story number two, Mr. Mike.
Chicago Sun-Times reported recently in New York State, two felons were charged after one of them posted a video on Facebook of himself shooting a gun at a suburban shooting range. a police officer monitoring Facebook when he saw a live video of a man he knew to be a felon, the gang member shooting a handgun at a range in Winthrop Harbor. The officer was also able to identify the shooting range where the video was being recorded. The officer contacted police in Winthrop Harbor, and officers were sent to the range. Police arrested the two 25-year-old felons recorded on the video on state and local charges. Both men were charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, a Class 2 felony. Bonds were set at $50,000 and $30,000. And what the heck is that supposed to be?
The gun nuts example, you mean? For years I've been warning people. When I first went on gun nuts, I knew one of the guys on gun nuts was a CSIS officer. I used to shoot with the guy. And I warned people that CSIS and the Mounties were monitoring the website. And, of course, people didn't believe me. And then, was it 2 years ago, there was one guy had a bunch of parts, and he recorded the police doing a home inspection of his residence. And it was just audio, and it was very long. But they admitted to him that they watched him on Gun Nuts on Facebook, and they'd flagged him because of all the sales he'd made on the equipment exchange. So anything you do on those forums or on Facebook, it is monitored. And I would assume all the podcasts are monitored too.
Yeah, our club has banned video recording now. They don't want people doing videos on the range anymore.
Because people do stupid things, and then they put it up on Facebook and then or YouTube, and then somebody sees it, reports it, and the range gets shut down. Like people shooting TV sets, I recall. But we won't go there. But yeah, if you record something stupid happening at your range, like for example, we're setting up the Tannerite River and you discharge an explosive on your range and they videotape it. Well, if the CFO sees it or if another member of your club sees it, you can get shut down.
Yep. All right. So that brings us to story number 3, which is Thomas.
Of course, you give me the long one when I've got a hard time breathing. Okay.
Mike's the one that assigned the story, so. Thanks, Mike.
No problem, George.
Okay, story 3. Court strikes down sweeping gun controls measure in U.S. territory. And this is from guns.com. Federal judge found the new law, which included a $1,000 tax on handguns. And I learned about that on one of the U.S. podcasts lately. In the U.S. territory of the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Island to be a legal stretch. Chief Judge Ramona, I won't even say her last name, Ramona, she sided with large parts of the plaintiff's argument challenging gun control legislation lawmakers adopted after the court overturned a 40-year-old handgun ban in the Commonwealth in March. In her 55-page ruling, the judge struck down a handgun registration scheme. Next, the court struck down arbitrary rules in what constitute an assault weapon. She clarified that the rifle attachments, such as a pistol grip that protrudes beneath the action, thumbhole stocks, folding or telescoping stocks, flare launchers, flash suppressors, and forward pistol grips, make guns safer. What a smart judge. And on the subject of the $1,000 tax exercise, the court held that the vast majority of pistols and revolvers sold on the online vendor were listed between $250 and $750 price range, and that charging such a high tax in almost all cases more than the value of the item was punitive and served no legitimate interest. At the Commonwealth's current minimum wage of $6.05 an hour, it would take an individual more than a month of regular wages in order just to pay for the taxes alone. Yet it was not a total win. The judge did upheld the Commonwealth's ban on magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, as well as safe storage requirements that mandated gun owners should be licensed. So we have that up here, so it's not too bad. They got a lot back. So it's nice to see such a positive ruling. And George, we saved the last one, the shortest one for you.
Yeah, I don't know if I can make it through this.
Take a breath first. Take a breath.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
LeBaron's is closed. I've never shopped at LeBaron's. I don't even know where LeBaron's is or what it is.
I have. It was a good little start.
Hence maybe the reason they closed down because not enough people knew about them.
If you're into hunting, and stuff like that. It was a good store. They used to sell handguns. They used to sell surplus stuff. But when all the firearms laws kicked in, they got rid of all that stuff, and it was more of a hunting store. You could still buy a handgun at LeBaron's, but you paid full retail pop, and they would order it for you. But they didn't have a lot that the action shooters would need. They didn't have the holsters or any of the gear, or the reloading selection was terrible. But you got good deals in the beginning of the year because of their buying power. They had some really good specials. We heard about this last week. I had some inside industry people tell me about it, but it was still a rumor at that point. So I emailed LeBaron a week ago, just before we recorded. I think it was last Saturday. I emailed them. They never answered back. And then they just put an official news release that they are going bankrupt. So, yep. Sad news.
Too bad.
Yep. So if you want a deal, you can go to LeBaron's now. They're having a closeout sale. mind you, Sarah and I went there on Friday, and it would already pick clean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right.
That's too bad. So yep. Mike's taken over what's new in the industry this week. So Mike...
I didn't take it over. We're just sharing it this week.
He suggested there was something that he wanted to talk about that he liked. So I said, well, you like it, you talk about it. I always put stuff that I like. If one of you guys finds something that you like, you put it and you talk about it. Oh, I do have a correction, though. And I forgot to put it in my first part. Remember a couple weeks ago when we did the Newton the Guns, I put the Canuck 1911 9mm. Ad that I saw said it was made in Canada. And when I tried to go onto Odell's site, I couldn't get into it. They were just updating the site, so there was no information in there. Well, I went on today. It's not made in Canada. It's made in Turkey. The grips, however, are made in Canada and had maple leaves all over them. So a little truth in advertising, please.
All right. Well, this comes from Chris USA. An innovative designer and manufacturer of small arms has begun delivery of the first Chris Vector firearms chambered in 10mm to authorized resellers and distributors. Available models include pretty much the short-barreled rifle and the rifle version that they have in the States for the 16-inch. So hopefully we'll get an 18.5-inch out up here, and their pistol variant for the Americans. The Chris Vector in 10mm greatly expands the weapon system's versatility. The Vector is now a viable option for hunting, in addition to being more rounded for personal defense and competitive shooting, thanks to a wide variety of projectile weight and the high velocity nature of the 10mm cartridge. Additionally, the patented Chris Super V system is a perfect fit for the 10mm auto, as it channels the powerful energy of the cartridge to reduce the muzzle rise and keep the shooter on target. The Chris Vector 10mm is fed by a 15-round capacity Glock 20 mag, which we only get the 10-rounder up here. And it's going to be continued to be offered in the Cerakote variations, flat dark earth, OD green, combat gray, and alpine white. So for more information, you can go to chris-usa.com. So I was browsing around on their website, and I didn't really realize this. I'm a big fan of this Chris Vector thing. I want one. I just can't justify it.
Well, how much are they?
They're easily two grand.
Ooh, that's a lot more than a junior carbine.
Yeah. I've seen
25.
But I did find out, though, the gun actually comes apart in two parts, the lower receiver and upper receiver. And if you can actually take the lower receiver off, and you can buy caliber conversion kits for them. So you could go from a 9 to a 45. Those were the two calibers that are out. So I'm curious, if you already have one of these, if you could swap out your 9 or 45, whatever you have, to a 10mm. But I've always been a big fan of these things. I think they looked awesome. I know they look kind of goofy, but the way they work is the bolt is on like a hinge. So when you fire and the bolt's coming back, the hinge part actually puts like the buffer, almost like the buffer and the buffer spring, it downward on an angle. That's why that bottom part looks so chunky. So it kind of, instead of pushing the recoil straight back at you, it actually pushes it down and back to help you with your muzzle climb.
So it's like a falling block action and a carbine.
I don't know what a falling block action
barrel.
Is.
Or tilt barrel. Like the actual action tilts?
No, not the action.
Or just the bolt goes down.
The bolt itself rides forward and backwards, But think of it, it's on like a hinge.
Okay.
So the actual buffer and buffer spring part, I'm trying to like relate this to an AR-15, is on like a 45 on that hinge. So when the bolt moves straight back, it moves this hinge part down. If you go to the Chris Vector website, you can check their little YouTube video and they show you like a little 3D action of it going off.
Now, is there an advantage over by doing that compared to, say, a straight blowback?
Instead of having all that recoil impulse coming straight back into you, it's coming back and down to try and counteract the muzzle climb. So, I always thought these were cool little things. Actually, it was when I saw this again, I thought, man, if I had one of these, I'd go do one of those pistol caliber carving courses with the armature group. That would be fun to do something like that with this.
I hear they're a lot more accurate than junior carbine too.
Oh yeah, I just always thought one of these would be awesome. There's kind of a flip thing, right? Because they are big and bulky, but I always thought that one of these things with the short barrel, the 5.5, I think is what they come in barrel, the short one. I always thought one of those would be great for around the house, just because it would be small enough that anyone in the house who needed it could use it. It's light enough, obviously, because in the U.S. they use it as a quote-unquote pistol without the buttstock on it. So if you ever had to use it one-handed, it would be usable. It wouldn't be so front-heavy like most firearms would be. And you would still have the brace on the back if you actually had the time to shoulder it.
Hmm.
So to me, the fact that it comes in a 10mm now just makes it all the better.
They are a nice-looking gun.
Yeah. Some people don't like the looks of them. I think they look pretty cool.
That's okay. I'll get to play with the 10mm in a couple weeks anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, since all I'm right. just sharing this this what's new in the industry, Thomas, why don't you do the next part?
Well, I think that American Eagle brand has been watching reloaders because they've come out with a polymer coating on their lead bullets. So I'll read you what it says from, it's called the American Eagle Syntec. The polymer coating in the all-new American Eagle Syntec prevents harsh metal on metal contact between the bullet and the bore, eliminating copper and lead fouling. Combined with clean burning powders and a catalyst lead-free primer, Syntec loads keep your gun cleaner, longer, so you can shoot more and more. So it looks like it's basically just, it's either sprayed on or it's dipped, but it's a polymer coating. And it apparently is supposed to reduce friction by 12% and barrel heat by 14%. So it looks cool. I don't have any prices on it yet, but.
Do you know what calibers they come in?
These had the basic, they had 9, 40, and 45s.
Okay. Yeah, I saw if you're subscribed to, I think, Julie Golub on on YouTube, she did an episode, I think, where she shot like 500 or 1,000 of these through her M&P when she was practicing for competition, and she kept running a swab through it, just the barrel, just to show you how dirty it was after so many rounds, and it kept coming out clean. So that's pretty cool.
Well, apparently it's supposed to really help reduce the lead fouling, because it's probably shooting plain lead is that, you know, especially if they're hot loads, it just leads up your gun so fast. So that's why so many people are switching to plating, but plating is more money. So if you cast your own, this is a really good option.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay, that brings us to the main topic. And this week we're going to do a top 10 list. Anything better? Question mark. Top 10 health benefits of going to a shooting range. And I'm guessing, Thomas, you got this from Health and Fitness Revolution?
Yeah, Health and Fitness Revolution.
All right, so
I thought it was great seeing a physical fitness trainer promote shooting, so I figured with something different for a change.
This is great, because I don't think I've ever heard another show really kind of touch on this topic, so this is awesome.
Yep. All right. Should we do this at a countdown and start at 10? just to confuse you guys, because the show notes have it in order 1 to 10.
I'm going
to
start.
Complicated for us. Then we have to mean scrolling down and scrolling back. That's too much work.
and since I'm lead, I'm going to make the executive decision. So number one, builds physical discipline increases strength, stamina, hand-eye coordination, and fine motor skills. Discuss.
It's true. Well, it really is, because you pick up, say, for a handgun for the first time. Most people, their arms are sore after because they're using a set of muscles they don't normally use, like holding something physically up in the air like that. So it does build up strength.
Yep. Yeah. And hand-eye coordination, definitely.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely say, compared to most people, just sitting on the couch watching TV, getting outside and doing something active is always good, right?
Yep. All right, number two, arm strength. Shooting a gun requires strong, sturdy arms and hands. In order to aim and shoot your target, you must keep your hands and arms steady. That is so very true.
And not drink very much coffee before you go shooting, because you'll really see the effects of caffeine on that front sight.
Well, you know, anyone that shoots offhand.
Well, you notice it. You really notice it.
Yeah, notice. And then try shooting a rifle offhand with a scope and have it zoomed in. You notice it real quick and real big.
My asthma medication, the blue one is fine, the rescue inhaler. If I take the purple one, I shake a little bit. I get the tremors. And I can always tell. I'll go shooting. I've forgotten I've taken it, and I can see that front sight just wiggling a little bit. It's because of the medication, too. So that can affect it.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so number three.
Although folks try to get their guns as light as possible, you're still holding a piece of equipment, right? That's made of metal. Well, some are plastic and metal, but there's still metal components, right?
Yeah, and you think of any rifle or shotgun, it's going to have that barrel weight all the way out there. It's going to create that that teeter-totter effect on you that you need to really support it with your front hand.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number three, eyesight. Practicing your shooting can fix any eye deficiencies.
Cannot fix any eye
deficiencies.
Oh, can't.
You almost found the miracle cure.
I can attest to that.
I was just about to call shenanigans. I'm like, wait a minute. They can't do that. Oh, wait.
Oh, I wish it could.
Because it says can't. All right. So practicing your shooting cannot fix any eye deficiencies. But it can exercise the eye capabilities that you already have by giving your eye a break from staring at computers, TVs, phones, tablets. You'll be relieving this eye stress.
I'd say yes and no. After a day of doing appleseed, my eyes are sore.
Yeah. I used to work in the office, and we actually had to we were supposed to take little breaks every once in a while and like focus at different distances and stop staring at the bright lights and stuff. So yeah, focusing on a front sight can definitely help reduce eye strain.
Yep. Number four, increases mental discipline. Experienced marksmen know that sports shooting are 90% mental. Concentration levels are sharpened and expanded. Multiple problem-solving activities involving logic, mathematics, creative thinking outside the box, are needed and employed to succeed at any level of the shooting sports. That is a big ding, ding, ding. Yes, yes, yes.
Yep. Oh, yeah, definitely with the competitive shooting sports. I mean, IDP or IPSC, something like that, where you have to come up with a plan with what you're going to do. You have to be able to count your shots on the fly. You have to be able to think on the fly. You took an extra shot here. How many rounds are left in your magazine? Things like that. I'm sure, George, you can talk to Cowboy in doing the memory memory stages.
Yeah, having to remember the course of fire, because, like with ours, you'll have three stages, but each stage... You'll have three stages set up, but it's a six-stage shoot. So stage one and two will be shot on the same stage, but they'll change the course of fire, right? So you got six courses of fire, and you know, out of 20 targets, and it can get easy to forget and get lost, for sure.
Oh yeah.
I think that's why maybe some of these IPSC shooters do so well, is because they have the mental discipline to do the gaming, to participate in the sport.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's half the battle with some of the action shooting stages. Like, you really have to have mental discipline to figure out what you're doing, where you're going, and how to shave your seconds.
Yeah.
Number five, advances personal responsibility. Personal responsibility is taught throughout the shooting sports to advance both safety and skill development. Shooting sports also cultivate personal responsibility because they are a foundation for both security and liberty in any family or nation. Yep. I agree with that.
I concur.
Yeah, I agree. I can remember when I got my first rifle, I was really, really proud of it, and I knew the responsibility it had, and I was grateful that they trusted me enough to give me that responsibility. So yeah, definitely.
I think, now this is my own speculation, but I think once you take on the responsibility of gun ownership, it definitely makes a change in you, because you can no longer be that guy that flies off the handle or starts acting like an idiot in the grocery store or start running off at the mouth, or, you know, you can no longer be that guy because
it's going to bite you.
Yeah. Cause if you bring undue, like if you mouth off to the wrong guy and then that guy decides to take a swing at you, well, you're going to be held in a different view in the courts than that guy. Right. Because now you're going to be like, oh, that guy owns guns, so now we got to take his guns away until the courts figure this out. And, like, it just, I don't know, for me, not that I was much of a hothead before, but I could definitely see there's been times where I've gone, you know what, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because it's not worth the potential problems.
I had an incident a couple years with my neighbor and a couple years ago, and I took the hit, and I was going to drop him. But there had to be about 10 or 15 kids out front. I just called them a nasty name, went in, and I called 911.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas,
because, you know, I knew if I hit him,
I'd roll with the guy, right?
Yeah. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely see that one. Anything to add, Mike?
Nope. Yeah, I agree with all that stuff. I don't know what more there is really to say about it.
Well, plus, I think too, it's a personal responsibility too, because you're responsible. Like, all the tools that I have downstairs in my safe, I look at them as tools, and you probably look at them as tools too. But other people look at them differently. So I really have to put myself in a better light than say, I know, my neighbor next door. But because I have what I have, I'm looked at differently anyway. I remember the neighbors a couple years ago, one guy said, well, you know, if there's ever a problem, I'm going to go to Tom's house. Well, they all know that they all know that I own firearms because I've taken most of them all shooting. So
yeah,
just the ownership of a firearm is a big responsibility because it's such a dangerous tool if it's misused. So you've got a big responsibility in your hand, even owning it.
Yep.
Yeah. They're not toys like some people think, you know.
Next one is number six, promotes liberty. Shooting sports provide a natural environment to educate all citizens with a historical, honest view of freedom. Must be an American article.
It was, and there was also a thing in there about the Second Amendment, so I took that out. But I still agree with it about promoting liberty. Because as human beings, we have the liberty to protect ourselves.
Yeah, I was just going to say, not that I disagree with number six, but generally you don't hear Canadians speaking in those terms, which is we should be more freedom and liberty minded, but because we're such a socialist minded country, you know, our first response is to run to the government to take care of us instead of, you know, taking our own personal responsibility.
Why we have a socialist government right now.
I know.
But I think liberty really is almost the wrong word to be used there. Like, it is the right word, but it's just not a word that Canadians necessarily associate to shooting, right?
Exactly. And
it does still provide an opportunity to educate a lot of people about historical things and about freedom, right? Like, I have tons of people that I'll talk to about firearms, and they'll say, what do you mean you can't have, like, a shorter-barreled pistol? Government said it's too dangerous. Well, why is it too dangerous? Because the government said it, right? And it's just, you can almost go into a history thing about how the government, why the government thinks that a short-barreled pistol is too dangerous, or why a semi-automatic rifle that's 18 inches versus 18 and a half inches is okay to hunt with, but one is not.
I disagree.
Right?
I disagree. I think on the liberty standpoint, I think it's an important thing to look at it as being your liberty and your freedom. Like owning firearms and protect and being having the tools to defend ourselves is a liberty. So I think you have to look at that. And I don't think a lot of people do, but we should. It is a liberty, and we have to be able to protect that liberty and appreciate what we have, because we're going to lose it sooner or later if we keep doing this down this path.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's not a liberty. I'm just saying that I feel like most Canadians don't look at it as a liberty, right? It's normally a word that you hear that you would hear, that an American would associate to the Canadians would associate an American to using.
Yeah.
Generally, Canadians don't use the word liberty.
But I think gun owners tend to use the phrase, though.
So. Yeah.
Also, us old timers do, at least.
And the point Mike's saying is that we in Canada, we should be.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we all agree.
Yeah. Liberty.
Excellent.
Excellent. So number seven. Courage and confidence. For some people, shooting may seem like a very dangerous or scary thing to do. However, being trained properly is a great way to build confidence and courage.
You know, one of the most satisfying things I do is getting a new person that's scared of shooting and actually seeing the transformation from being scared to having fun to really liking it and wanting to do it again.
What was that girl at the cottage that we took out?
Oh, Marley.
Marley. She was like, she's like the poster girl for that. She was terrified. She's like, oh, I don't know. And then you're just come out and just come with us and just take a look. And then when she was still pretty nervous, but she slowly kind of went, okay, yeah, I want to try. And then once she started, she loved yours. Your pump, your Uzcon.
Mm-hmm.
And she shot it a bunch of times, and by the end of it she was great. She loved it.
I think the worst one, not the worst one, but the hardest one would had to be Jessica, Luke's wife. She was terrified. She was in tears. Like Luke, she was worried about the noise, so she had the headset. So I said I suggested double, like taking the foam plugs and the headsets. So when, you know, Luke ran to the car to get the extra headset for her, she looked at me like the tears were just running down her face. She was absolutely petrified. And it took a lot of calming words on my part to get her calmed down. And I think the only thing that did it was that she was able to relate to it as yoga, as a form of relaxation. And once she looked at it that way and she got over the fear level, you know, it's funny. Remember how Marley was complaining that when Rob let her first fire her 870, that it scared her, that it recoiled.
Yep.
Well, Jess was saying that she actually had fired one of Luke's gun, and she goes, it was really, really loud. The recoil was horrible. Oh, I got hurt. I got scared. So that's her first impression terrified her. So I figured, you know, that's not something Luke would do. You know, he's an experienced shooter. So I went up to him and said, Luke, you didn't put a 12-gauge in your hand. He goes, no, I put a 410 pump. There's no recoil whatsoever. But she still perceived it as being a big, loud, and violent experience. And trying to conquer that fear was tough. I was extremely proud of her that she did it. You know, once she conquered that fear, but, man, sometimes it's hard. It's really hard.
It's very special, right? Like, Eva, even a 22 rifle, she's like, no, don't, you know, not interested, don't like the noise, don't like, I'm like, yep, it's a 22. Like, I've, without ear protection, listening to podcasts, and I can still hear the podcast. Like, she goes, no, I just, it's, you know, it makes noise that I just don't want to, I don't like that noise.
Exactly, and that's why I won't listen to rap music or go to a rap concert. I don't like that noise.
But, you know, so, you know, the 410 for Jessica, it was loud enough, and it was a noise she just did not like, right? And, but so subjective, so.
It's a real individual thing. Like you can try to explain it to somebody as best you can, But unless they actually experience themselves, it's hard to get over the fear.
Yeah.
So it does build up courage and confidence, because once Jessica, you should have seen her. Oh man, it was phenomenal. If you haven't listened to it before, when we went to charity shoot, she was terrified a couple of years ago. I mean, petrified. And Jazz and I worked on her. We started her on Luke's 10:22, but she didn't really like it. She didn't like the rifle, but she loved my compensated 22 with the red dot. And it was hilarious. I put in a couple of rounds. She goes, oh, I like this. So, you know, we did a couple of single rounds. And I handed her the magazine. She goes, could you load it right up to the top for me, please? Sure. So we loaded up. She popped it all off. And then she saw Jazz shooting his M&P. And his actually M&P 9 has a nice trigger on it. She's like, oh, what's that? So Jazz said, this is what it is. So did the same thing. He put one round in it. We put another round in. She goes, oh, I like this. Handed the nice. Can you fill it up, please? And a grin on her face. So I went out for a smoke. And when I left for the smoke, she was looking at the AR with Stacy. When I came back, Stacy had her shooting the AR. So in that 30 minutes, three or four people helped her overcome her fears. So,
yeah. All right.
She actually thanked me and hugged me afterwards. So it was worth it.
It's all about the hugs.
Well, okay, Luke hugged me too, so, but okay.
So number 8, adrenaline. Shooting is an exhilarating thing to do. Your adrenaline will be spiked and causing a surge of energy to pulse through your blood. Increased levels of adrenaline in your blood signal your liver to break down glycogen, the substance that provides your muscles with glucose, the primary source of fuel in your body. Okay, clearly this is from a health magazine, because that's a lot of health-tastic information.
So pretty much you get an adrenaline dump.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it's like, Mike, when you run that course, and when you're as soon as that buzzer goes, that's it. The adrenaline just is like injected into your brain.
Oh, yeah. You stand around and they tell you that you're next. Oh man, your adrenaline's pumping. You're just anxious to go. You get the jitters, especially on that very first stage when you got to get the jitters out of the way. And you try to just remember your plan, and that beep goes off and your mind just goes blank, and you're trying to remember how to do everything while you're all jacked up on adrenaline. It's fun. But one of the big things that I would say, and I'm not a doctor, obviously,
I just good reasons. TV.
Yeah, exactly. But I would say that since shooting and doing a lot of competition, I'd say that my ability to react to adrenaline dumps has changed a lot. Like, I used to be a freeze-up kind of person. Like, something big happens, and like something big happens around the house, I freeze. I used to freeze. And I've noticed lately that when something happens, something, I'll say bigger, or something really big has happened lately, thankfully. But if something big happened, I've noticed that my ability to think through it and work through it has gotten a lot better.
Have you noticed that your speed and reflexes have greatly improved on little things? Like if I see something falling or something, it's amazing how fast I can actually react and grab it and stop it from hitting the floor. Like my reaction time is just so fast. If something happens, it's like bang, I react instantly. But 20 years ago, I wasn't like that. It would hit the floor. But now I guess from reacting so fast, I'm able to do stuff really, really quick.
I would say no. I've always had pretty good reflexes. I used to be a goaltender. So
now that explains a ton.
I like being, having, you know, what's it? A metal puck or a rubber puck being flung at me at 100 miles an hour, getting hit in the head. Yep.
You know,
it would explain a lot.
You always put the kid that's not quite right in the head in net.
It's true.
And what makes it even funnier, I don't know if Wanda's son is still upstairs, but he just came back from playing hockey and he's a goaltender too.
My best friend in high school was an acute paranoid schizophrenic, and this guy had issues, but he was the best damn goaltender in the whole league.
Sorry, Mike. I couldn't help myself.
I'm still going with I had good flexibility and fast reflexes. That's why I was in that.
That's what she said.
That and I volunteered for it when I was a kid. I always wanted to play net.
Yeah, so. When I was a kid, I always played defense, and our goalie had to go away or something, so they asked for a volunteer to play net. It was the first two times and the last two times I ever played net. I was horrible.
I think something like that happened for my hockey team. I volunteered. I wanted to do it. My dad did not want me to do it. My mom did not want me to do it, but I did it anyway. And I think I ended up playing net. Gee, I had to have been at least over 7 years I played net. And even when I, in college, I went back to playing hockey and I played as a player and I said, this is stupid. I want to play net. So. That's the mindset I'm in. So, no, to answer your question, Thomas, I have not noticed an increase in my reflexes.
I did notice an increase in mine.
Okay. Well, that's good.
All right. Number 9, physical balance. Remaining perfectly still in your shooting stance while aiming your gun at the target exercises your core muscles, which supports proper posture. When the abdominal muscles are weak, the lower back holds additional pressure and weight from simple daily tasks like walking. Strengthening the abdominal muscles allows the weight from the upper body to be evenly distributed over the front and back, improving balance. This is where my doctor says, you're fat and out of shape, lose weight, your back won't hurt too much. For the last 2 months, I've had chronic back pain. That was my doctor's advice. You're fat and out of shape.
Could be.
Although I kind of worded it more like this here. Well, you know, to build your core muscles, you need to lose weight, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, so I'm fat and out of shape.
Basically, yeah.
So what your doctor is really trying to say to you, George, is you need to shoot more.
Excellent point. That is absolutely right.
Yeah. I think that's your problem, George. You keep saying that you're not going shooting during the week. Well, that's what it is. You just got to go shooting more.
You know what? Plug,
dust get, off that cowboy get, hat and those boots.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm actually at my dad's mercy right now because I'm, you know, hello, my name is George, and I'm one of those stupid people that waited till his birthday to renew his firearms license and now can't take his gun shooting for the next 2 frickin' months, 60 days anyways, because I got no firearms license. Well, I have it. It's just I don't have the renewed one, so I'm at my dad's mercy. I wanted to shoot Wanda Zuzcon, and I'm
No. When you renewed, did you not get a receipt that you paid and that your renewal was accepted?
Yeah.
Then your license would still be valid. You renewed on time.
Are you sure?
I'd be calling the firearm center. I'm sure you it didn't expire. They accepted your renewal.
Well, yeah, and then actually I did just call them. I'm like, yeah, it's been like over a month now. Like, where the hell's my license? And she keyed it all in and, oh, well, it's at the process where they've got to add the picture to your license. I'm like, how freaking long does this take to add a stupid picture to my license? And then they got to send it back to the province for approval. What freaking approval?
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah. So anyway, so I've been at my dad's mercy. So anyway, so yeah, I'm like, well, yeah, let's go swing by my place and pick up Wanda Zuzcon. I won't shoot her Zuzcon. Oh, that sounds like a lot of work. We'll just take my guns. I'm like, fine.
Let's go to the range.
Yeah. So, not sure how we got off on that topic, but anyways.
Which brings us to the next topic.
When the RCMP sends you that first notification, don't be a George. Renew the license right away. Because it's, what'd she say? I think she said 45 to 60 days. For you to get your license.
Well, when Terry renewed, well, we had to transfer Terry's guns because her license expired, and it expired a week. So when I called them, they said, well, we'll notify the local law enforcement now that they've been transferred. So I guess once your license expired, they notify the law enforcement you no longer have a license and you won't restrict firearms.
Oh, well, you know what else I found out? Because I did mine online, but if your license actually expires, you can't do it online.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh my goodness. It was like Tuesday morning, my birthday morning, and I'm like, oh, I keep forgetting. I got to get this done, stupid George. And so I did it, and it says right on there, if your license is expired, you can't do it online. I'm like, well, it expires today. Maybe that's not quite expired. Went through, they took the payment, and they're processing it. So I was like, woo, by the skin of my teeth.
Want to hear something funny? The last time I renewed, I got it back within 2 weeks.
Of course you did.
2 weeks.
All right. So the long and short of it is, don't be fat and out of shape.
Go shooting.
Go shooting, because my doctor said so. Actually, one more quick thing before we leave and go on to number 10. She's now gotten to the point where she's, because every time I do a physical and I run for her, she does the blood work. I always have to ask her to put the lead test on it. And she's almost getting to the point now where she remembers. She's like, last time she's like, oh yeah, there's something else I got to add to this, isn't there? And I'm like, yeah, I need my lead tested. She goes, oh, that's right, because you're shooting. And I'm like, yep. She goes, oh, okay. So your doctor should know that they need to add lead, test your lead. Very important.
Yeah, it is. Especially if you've been shooting a lot indoor ranges.
Yeah, or reloading, you know, because you're handling, if you're reloading lead projectiles and stuff, right? We kind of chased, I let about 3 different rabbits loose and chased all 3 of them. So, number 10, focus. Keep your eyes glued to the front sight while aiming requires a lot of focus. Removing your mind from any other activities, you find yourself in the present moment in which there is only one thing at hand to do and straight in front of you. That is very true.
It is. It's very well said. I find when I go to the range, because a lot of times when I go to practice with my shifts, I'm there by myself because I'll be there at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And after shooting for an hour, I'm so relaxed. It's just so relaxing.
Yep.
Whether I'm with somebody else or if I'm by myself, I just taking all that concentration, all that focus, it just drains everything away and you forget about everything else.
It's because you got good physical balance. You got good core muscles. And you're not fat.
No, I'm not fat and out of shape. I'm just a chain smoker with a respiratory disease.
You can't breathe. You can't breathe. Whoa.
No. Not this week. It's been bad.
So that's the 10 things, top 10 health benefits for going to a shooting range, and that's by Health and Fitness Revolution, and that's a bit of an edited down version. So if you want to see the whole article, you can go Google them and read it all for yourself.
And this has been kicked out of the show notes. I don't know how many times we've had it. I've had it in the back burner for months. We always find something else to put in. So this week, screw it, we put it in.
Yeah. No, I'm glad. It was a good topic. All right. So that brings us to the events. I kind of thought Thomas would do event number 1, but Mike, take it away.
Okay. Event number 1, the CCFR is doing their the Gunny Girl calendar for 2017. They're looking for women to be to pose for it. The general requirements, they must be a CCFR member and have their PAL. Their firearm they pose with doesn't have to be theirs. We are not looking for tacked Barbies, but classy, relatively fit, tasteful women with firearms. For photo submissions, they don't need to have a firearm necessarily with their pose. We just want to see their general look and attitude and full body shots. 2 or 3 is adequate. Face must be visible. Good lighting is a must. Professional shots can be addressed later. We are hoping to find a selection from across all provinces to fill the 12 months. Deadline is October 14th. We may consider late entries with notice. If you or someone you know is an attractive, fun, gun-loving female who wants or who might be interested, then please click on the link and then submit your photos to ccfrwomen@gmail.com. If you have any questions, please contact Ann Jordan or Kelly Lynn at 780-278-5500 or at the email above.
And a big shout out to Thomas for reaching out to Tracy and getting our very own Mary into the calendar.
Yes, Tracy was very excited to have an Olympic hopeful on boards.
Yeah, so yeah, I saw Tracy had made that announcement. Was it yesterday?
Well, I didn't even hear. I didn't know about the calendar until Mike mentioned it last week, because I'm not on that Gunny Girl feed. I guess it's a woman's feed that Sarah watches, I guess, right?
Yeah, Sarah told me about this.
And I figured it'd be perfect because, you know, Mary's got her Shooting for Gold website and she's trying to promote, you know, her Olympic dreams. So I figured, why not? And she actually had somebody do a photo shoot a couple weeks ago, and they did some really tasteful pictures of her. It was like a Hunger Game pose, but instead of having a bow, she had a rifle. I figured, why not? No, she's a pretty girl. She likes guns. She'd be perfect. Yep. And give her some exposure.
Yeah. All right, so event number two. Thomas.
Event number two is the Sight and Day at the Port Perry Rod and Gun Club. It is on Saturday, October 15th from 9 to 12 noon. The cost is $30 per shooter with one gun, $5 for each additional gun. You supply the ammo. The range is located at 2431 Highway 7A, Port Perry, Ontario. And it's a half a kilometer east of Island Road on the north side. It can be difficult to see, but range from the road, so keep your eye out. I guess I should mention, too, it's a 100-yard range. And we have target stands at 100, 75, 50, and 25. So you can set up for different distances at least. Unfortunately, it's not a 300-yard range, but there's not a lot of those around.
No, we've got 200 in London. I think East Elgin, they've got, I think, a 400. And I don't know of any other ranges that go past 100.
Just on the bases?
Yeah, at least around the London area.
I don't think there's any really, really private big ranges in Ontario.
No, all those farmers growing crops, feeding people.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, we're taking care of them with the city. They're expanding, taking over everything.
Farmers.
Come on, can't they just let us shoot over their crops?
Yeah, like, what's the problem? Come on.
Want to hear a funny farmer story? The guy up in Port Perry.
Am I good? Wait. Am I going to have to edit it out?
No, you won't have to edit it out.
No? Okay.
There's a guy that owns all – he's an old, old farmer in Port Perry. He owns – or up in Little Britain. He owns all the land at the north end of Lake Scugog. Really nice old guy. And he raises cattle. Well, we're driving down there a couple of years ago. I'm looking at the cows, and all the cows had pictures of cows spray painted on the cows. The farmer had gone out and made – fluorescent orange paint and painted silhouettes of orange cows on all those cows because some idiots accidentally shot two of his cows thinking they were moose.
No.
Yeah, he lost two.
What? Jeez.
Down the road, there was a venison farmer. This guy had a whole thing full of deer, and people would pop a deer, drive by the road, pop a deer and steal one of his deer.
Jeez.
People are so stupid. That's terrible.
I agree. And my comment about the farmers was completely tongue-in-cheek. I love our farmers.
So what's event three, George?
All right, number three. Also on October 15th, Select Shooting Supplies is having a range day at the Galt Sportsman Club on Saturday, October 15th from 10 till 4, no PAL required. Sales reps from Vortex and Smith & Wesson will be there with various firearms, optics, and accessories. Dean just announced on his Facebook page that a CZ Shadow. Send your hate mail to host@newshootercanada.ca. Attention,
George.
You anti-Canadian CZer. Anyways, Dean just announced on his Facebook page that a CZ Shadow 2 will be available to test fire now, and a $100 gift certificate will be drawn, or gift card. Ground Power Canada Distribution will also be attending with their full product line for you to try. Grand Power Armorer Services will also be available on site. If you own a Grand Power and have questions or need anything upgraded or fixed, bring it out to the event. Just please keep it encased until we are ready to look at it, until they are ready to look at it. And that brings us to event number four.
It's a pistol fundamentals course put on by Armature Group in association with the CCFR. Saturday, October 22nd, between 7:45 and 6:30. The cost is a very reasonable $115, and the round count is 400 rounds. The course will be held at the Barrie District Hunters and Anglers Conservation Club. Although the club is located at 1758 Old 2 South, Midhurst, Ontario, L0L1X0, Ontario, the course will take place at the back, quote-unquote back range, located at the rear of the property and accessible via a separate entrance. That entrance is located at the intersection of Story Road and Russell Road. They're also going to have a carbine operator fundamental course scheduled in Barrie on November 19th. The courses, outlined, and required equipment that you must bring can be found at armaturagroupltd.com.
And the next one is Andrew and the CD Academy having a course. I actually cut this down a little bit because I had way too much last time. The Tactical Vehicle Operators course runs Saturday, October 29th and 30th between 8 a.m. and 1700 hours, 5 o'clock. It will be held at the Titan Tactical and Combat Incorporated at 343 Country Road 22, Picton, Ontario. This is a must-take course for any Armed Transport Service employee, but it's also open to the public. Course cost is $429 plus tax. The price does not include ammunition. Round count is to be announced, and it also includes, something in quarters, lodging, food in quarters. It's like a barrack system there. And we put the link in the Facebook page for you. And number six, George?
Land Shooting Supplies and the Silverdale Gun Club are hosting a pumpkin shoot fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The shoot will take place on Sunday, October 30th, between 10 and 4. Silverdale is located at 4948 Concession 4, Grimsby, Ontario. And that's that.
And you got the draw tickets. You've got the bucket of booze, the 1911 9mm, and I think it's a Colt or a Ruger AR that they're giving away. Yeah, Ruger AR-15. Must be the new blowback one, not the gas one. You can probably order the tickets on their website if you want. Tickets are one for ten or $3 for $20.
Cool. Event 7.
Are you looking for a job? The CSSA is hiring a course coordinator. The CSSA is looking for a talented individual to fill the position of course coordinator. If you are someone who can work well independently, as well as part of a team, if you possess moderate computer/internet skills, if you have the ability to multitask, organize, and prioritize, if you possess basic math skills and are not afraid to ask questions, then you might be the person Team CSSA is looking for. Duties would include but not limited to the following: answering telephone calls and emails in a timely and friendly manner, responsible for organizing the instructors and supplying them with timely information as it becomes available, tracking course revenues, sending out course packages to instructors and certification to successful course attendees, assist another team office assignments as required. A valid PAL is a huge asset. Please note that this is a full-time entry-level office position. Application must work from Durham region. Send your resume to info@cdnshootingsports.org.
I thought about applying for it.
Yeah, you're in the right area.
Well, it doesn't say Thomas need not apply at the bottom.
as soon as it comes in, Thomas Donnelly, it gets filed under G.
Well, rumor has it that the TTC is going to offer an early retirement package to the unionized staff this year, which they haven't done for a long time. So if they did, like if I was offered a good package where I'd walk away with 50 grand plus my full pension, I'd take something like that. It'd be perfect. I'd probably work from home. But entry level means it doesn't pay a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my friend Pat used to be, she was a receptionist at CSSA. Well, it had to be 16 years ago, And she ended up getting a job at the TTC, and she just said it just, you know, it doesn't pay a lot. But, you know, it's a small organization. It's probably equal to what anybody else is paying out there right now.
So that's cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So that brings us to listener email. And who's the first one from?
From Sharp, isn't it?
From Mike and Lynn, I think.
Yeah, Mark and Lynn.
Or Mark and Lynn.
Yep. So they email or they messaged us. Glad to hear you made it to see the mounted shooting competition in Selkirk on Sunday, Mike. I didn't make it to that one. You are correct about loading in the tent. There is actually a designated area that you are not allowed to remove your guns from during the competition. Basically, the area at the end of the arena and the arena itself. So you're just clarifying that. I was asking about, like, the, I guess you would call it the safe table that they use for mounted shooting. And you're saying, yeah, there is a tent there that's specifically for that. It wasn't just a coincidence that there was a tent there. And yeah, it's too bad that we didn't get a chance to meet, but maybe next time I'm out there, we'll get a chance to actually see him in action.
All right, the next one is from Sharp97. This one actually just came in today. I just wanted to wish you guys a happy, healthy, and sweet new year and many more podcasts. If you guys could pass this on to my Modern Rifle Radio, because I don't have their email address, and I'm running around like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to get ready before the holiday. So hope you guys have a great year and lots more shooting together. Sharp 97.
Oh, now, thank you, Benny. Happy New Year to you.
You need to let us know what the holiday's called. Is it just the Jewish New Year, or is there like a festival associated with it? So let us know. So all our Jewish listeners, Happy New Year.
Crickets, 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 crickets. Okay, well, wasn't there one in there from Thomas that George didn't put in last week, Mike?
Oh, no.
They're about 3 weeks old now, maybe even four.
Which one?
There was one that Thomas had gone to an armature group, I believe the pistol course.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to throw him under the bus. I was going to say, are we allowed to throw listeners under the bus?
Yeah, we already threw him under the bus, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you can't throw Thomas under again. He's a nice guy.
Let's
throw Baron under this time.
I was just talking to him this week, and he said he was going to do a review of the course, and he's been extremely busy and hasn't had an opportunity to.
So you're going to throw Thomas under the bus, a listener, not a paid employee of New Shooter Canada, for not doing his voluntary job.
I never said I was nice. No one's ever.
That's true.
It being a nice guy. So please send any feedback, questions, or comments if you're still listening.
Address it to George at New Shooter Canada.
I only throw Thomas under the bus because I've physically met the man and we've broken bread together, so to speak. I feel that I've got a good enough relationship with him that I can do that. So, if you're still...
He still never returned my text message from last month about wanting to go shooting, though. Thump, thump.
All right. Well, Thomas has just stopped listening to the show. So, if you're still listening and have feedback, questions, or comments, you may have send them to host@newshootercanada.ca. Or our Facebook page or comment section on the website. And iTunes, has anyone checked iTunes?
There are none.
Okay. So give us a iTunes review if you have not done so yet. And Facebook likes, we are up to 923 as of now. Jeez, we're almost at
1,000. What were we at when I came on the show? You were like 70?
Yeah, something like that. It was like way.
It's so nice to see that the listeners actually listen and like our page, so thank you.
Yeah, clearly they don't like me. They like you guys.
Yeah, you keep losing likes in your Rebel Redneck page, don't you?
No, I think I'm over 700. It's been over 700 for quite some time now. I know it kind of fluctuates. I've never I don't think I've ever unliked a page that I've liked. Like, who does that?
I do it to that page all the time just to go make you throw your numbers up.
I know, you just, I noticed the other day, I got the notification, Facebook user Thomas Donnelly likes your page. And I'm like, of course he does, because it's going to be a month, then he's going to unlike it.
Yeah.
And then the next notification was that you posted something to it. I'm like, well, that's why he liked it, just so he could post something to it.
Exactly. I couldn't post anything unless I liked it. I might have kept it still liked.
So don't be a Thomas.
Yes.
Like our page and leave it liked. Closing comments. Is you starting us off, Thomas?
Yeah, I remember last when we did the show about the Canuck 1911. I was going to do the Korth, and I saw the price on it, and I figured, no way am I going to look at it. Well, I actually went back and looked at it. And I should have looked at it because this thing is absolutely amazing. They make some nice guns. Their PPC revolver is amazing. If you want a handmade revolver with a five-way user adjustable trigger, you have to take a look at this gun. And they actually have, how about a cylinder that it can extract rimless 9mm semi-auto cases from a revolver? It's just, oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful gun. Anyway, Handgun Radio's latest episode, 143, has revolver guru Grant Cunningham on as a guest. And Grant talks about the Nighthawk Korth revolvers and his involvement in the project. It was a great show, and these guns will really impress you. So have a listen on the links of episode 143 of Handgun Radio, and Grant Cunningham's website are in the show notes.
So, wait, when there's a five-way adjustable trigger, how many ways does your trigger move?
You can adjust.
Mine goes forward and backwards.
Yes, but you can adjust your trigger weight, your hammer weight. You can adjust your actual trigger over travel and your pre-travel. And, yeah, you can adjust the hammer and the sear and the trigger, basically. And there's some have, I think the trigger has actually two different adjustments, like each of the five adjustments.
Okay.
And I think they are a Lothar barrel. It looks like it's a tension fit barrel. And it's, you think it's rails on the side. It's not meant for, I guess you could put flashlights and crap on it. But what it's designed for is PPC shooters. You put a little ledge on it. So when you're shooting barricade, you've got a steady rest you can put the gun on, and you can put optics on this, weights on it, everything. It's really, really cool. I think US is about $4,000, so it's probably going to be, if you can get one up here, because they're handmade, probably $5,500, $6,000 if you can even get one. But, it is nice looking.
If you put a flashlight on that thing, how would you, and you turned it on with your hand while you gripped it, you'd be putting your hand right beside the cylinder.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a good idea.
No, that would not be a good idea. Do not do it.
Well, you could have a pressure release button on the grip, I guess.
By the way, here's the five-way adjustable double action mechanism. Trigger stop, trigger return, mainspring, double action trigger progression, and sear adjustment. That's what the five-way adjustable trigger can be done to the five-way adjustable trigger.
Well, apparently, too, the finish on this thing, they've been using the same demo gun for a very long time, and I guess probably last year, and there's no marks on the finish from the cylinder turns. Like, all my guns, especially the blued ones, all my revolvers have cylinder turn marks.
Yeah.
I looked at the picture that they had at the show, and even Grant commented on it. There is no turn marks. The finish is so hard, it just glides over it. Thousands and thousands of rounds, and there's no mark on it yet. So that's remarkable. Yeah. But have a listen. He really goes into it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I took a look at the Mongoose, which is the non-PPC version of it, and it's too bad they don't have a – well, I mean, I'm not spending $3,500 on a revolver anytime soon.
Well, that's the 3-inch 9mm?
Or the Mongoose. Yeah. No, 357. It comes with – 4-inch, or you can get it in a 3, a 5.25, or a 6-inch.
They also make cylinders for Smith & Wesson J-frame revolvers, I think, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they make separate cylinders, so you can put a core cylinder. And they have interchangeable cylinders, too. I think if you've got the 357, you can buy an extra cylinder and put a 9mm in it.
It does look like a really nice looking gun, a really nice gun though. But of course they do the same thing that I think Ruger does, and it annoys me. They send it out with Hogue grips, which are nice, but they send them out with the finger grooved ones.
I hate those things.
I know. I hate finger grips. I have them, and I want to take a Dremel to them, but I don't want to ruin my only grips, so.
You have to have a certain size hand for finger grooves, and if your hand's not that size, they can be very uncomfortable. I don't like them.
No, I don't like it either, but it's what I got, so it's what I go with.
You know who actually, Hogue, a friend of mine had a Ruger convertible. It was a 357 9mm revolver, single action. And Hogue, you can actually get them to make huge custom-made wood grips. Like, not stuff like this. I mean, really nice grips just for that gun. I think you spent a couple $100s. They're beautiful target grips. And it came from Hogue. Nice wooden grips.
Oh, yeah. If you go to their website, you see Hogue offers the exact same grips, but without the finger grooves.
Yeah.
And I wish that's what they would. I wish that's what they would send these ship these revolvers out with. Because to me, that seems more universally acceptable by people than a finger grooved option.
Yeah, but what are the Hogue grips? $35-$40.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing I like about wooden grips, especially if it's a full wraparound grip, because it is wood, it's easy to actually mold it to your hand. It's very easy just to file off. I had a Walther KPT 2000 Olympic pistol, and it was really, really uncomfortable. And I just took a little bit of sandpaper to it and just took it down and got it to fit my hand perfectly.
Hmm. Cool. All right, so that brings us to shout-outs. Do you want to do yours first, Thomas, so I don't steal your thunder?
Well, of course, another shout-out to Tracy Wilson. I approached her about Mary. She got right on it. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm not going to go on about the other one. I'll leave that. I told you guys about it. I don't have to share it with the listeners. Besides, it's such a long story, my voice will probably give out and I'll start hacking.
All right. And then my shout out was the same as to Thomas, for Tracy and what she's done for Mary. And getting her into the CCFR and the calendar. So, shout out to Tracy.
My shout out this week, I got a few here. Shout out to Mike. He's a shooter that I met at the match this weekend, and he's actually the one who gave me the brass rod for trying, I should say, to knock out my my squib load, which I guess I don't know why, but he had I guess a scrap piece of brass. And it was right the 38 diameter, so he cut off a piece and smoothed it out for me and gave it to me. So thanks to him.
That is lucky.
Yeah, that is so I know. Lucky. And I also want to say a big thanks to Greg. He runs the IDPA club at EOSC, and he's the one who helped accommodate Sarah and I with Leela so that we were both able to shoot this weekend. And he even said at the end, he said, you know, if this next time you guys want to do that, just let him know and it won't be a problem. He'll help us out so that we can both shoot. And so I guess also an extension of that is to the EOSC gang who put up with Sarah and I and a well, actually baby didn't scream very much, but and a baby. So that and last but not least to Sarah, big shout out to her for coming back into IDPA, going in it. Full steam ahead. I'm really proud of her.
When's her next her first match?
It was today.
Oh, excellent. She shot. How'd she do?
She did good.
Well, I guess she smoked you since your gun. Well, did she smoke you?
No.
Okay.
He came in third overall. Do you listen to the show while we're recording?
But he didn't say what Sarah came in. That's all.
No, but he's just been talking about her shooting.
I don't pay attention. I'm on drugs.
There we go. He admits it. He doesn't pay attention.
I'm on drugs. I'm severely medicated.
Here come the excuses.
It was actually true this time.
So how did Sarah do?
I think she did very well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And he's leaving it at that. Unless she's standing beside him, ready to swing the hand.
All right, so let's bring this episode to a close.
This is a train wreck this week.
I thought it went well.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a train wreck. I mean, we kind of skipped a few times on the track.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Never fully derailed.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're right.
So let's get things wrapped before we do go off the tracks. So thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing. And until next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kids shooting and join one of our advocacy groups, or all of them, even better.
Yep.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Good night, everybody.
Until next time, take care, guys.
Well, I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.